Hi, everybody. It is April 27th, 2021. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thanks so much for listening today, or maybe on the archives. We know a lot of people do that. That's the nature of podcasting, and we appreciate it. And everything we do is archived over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Again, ace-ed.org. Our wonderful magazine, it's an online journal, Equity and Access, is over there. You'll love it if you flip through it. It's for pre-K-12 educators and those interested in pre-K-12. All our podcasts are over there, plus a ton of other information about equity and accessible learning for all students. Okay, ace-ed.org. And on that note, okay, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today with the author of a book called Can You Hear Me Now? And that's Suzanne DeMalley, okay? And she's a former teacher in Baltimore area, okay? Author of the National PTA's Classroom Auditory Learning Lab Resolution. Somebody's breathing hard into the phone. Suzanne?
Yes.
Hi, you're there. There was all this heavy breathing all of a sudden. Everything okay?
Oh, gosh. Sorry about that. Yeah, everything's
That's
fine.
No problem at all. I was just concerned, okay, wanted to make sure you were okay, okay? So
That's
let's
right.
let me
I don't
do that
pass
again.
Out.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, you're right, right? You're fine.
Okay.
Good.
Hi, Larry.
Okay,
how
Suzanne?
Are you?
I'm fine, Suzanne.
Yeah.
Let's reset on this one. Your book is called Can You Hear Me Now? Okay, and you're a former teacher. You authored the National PTAs, I love this, Classroom Auditory Learning Resolution. Okay, auditory. We're talking about kids with hearing challenges. Okay? And you're the recipient, bless your heart, of the National PTA Life Achievement Award in May 2007. You've been doing this a while. We're in 2021. Before we even go further, I was on your website this morning, okay, which is Suzanne DeMalley, DeMalley.com, SuzanneDeMalley.com. And there was a picture of your family?
Yes.
And it was you have three kids, right?
I do. Yes, I do.
Yeah. And how tall is your son?
Oh, gosh. He's probably like 6'4 right now. He's 22 years old right now.
Yeah, he's a big guy, okay? I think he's taller than 6'4.
I think that's because I'm short.
Yeah, he's a big guy, okay? And he had the way I read your website, this all started because he had some hearing difficulties, okay? And
he did.
you got all involved in let's hear this story. And again, your book, and again, what you did for the PTA is unbelievable. Okay, you wrote there.
Thank you.
Classroom Auditory Learning Resolution. Congratulations. The book is Can You Hear Me Now? And this is Suzanne DeMalley. What happened at the very beginning?
Well, I got into education because when my son, who, like you said, is very tall right now, when he was
very
in
tall.
Kindergarten. Yes, he was diagnosed with something called an auditory processing disorder, which means that his ears worked just fine, but his brain had difficulty interpreting the signals that were coming through his ears. So,
how interesting. That's very interesting. I never heard of such a thing. That's very interesting.
It is. And
yeah.
It actually about 5% of our student population is diagnosed with this problem, but they suspect probably a lot more kids have it. It's just that it's oftentimes misinterpreted as ADD or ADHD. So I was told that he had this problem, and I really didn't know what it meant or how it would impact his learning or what I could do to help him. And so as a parent, I just began doing a lot of research to learn about hearing needs of children and how the classroom impacts the ability to hear, because so much of learning in the classroom is auditory. And I uncovered,
absolutely.
Larry, I tell you, it was just like opening Pandora's box. I uncovered all this information, how normal hearing children have difficulty hearing in a typical classroom because of poor acoustics, because a lot of kids actually do have some type of hearing impairment, whether it's permanent or temporary from an ear infection. And all kids, until they're in their teen years, have immature neurological auditory abilities. So they all have greater hearing needs than an adult with normal hearing. So I uncovered all these problems that were impacting learning and literacy and behavior and attention in the classroom. And then I heard about a really simple solution to it, which is giving teachers wireless microphones and installing speakers in the classroom that would evenly distribute the teacher's voice. And so it eliminates that problem with kids seated in the back row of the classroom and not being able to hear properly. And so that became my passion.
Wow. And are you working with any of the companies in the field? I know Front Row was out there and other companies. Do you work with them as well?
You know, I had to be really careful about that. I did have contact with the companies, but I became extremely passionate about getting this technology in the schools, and I formed a nonprofit organization back in, 2006. And I really, tried to promote it nationwide. And so being nonprofit, I tried to keep my distance from companies so that when I was out there advocating for the technology, people understood that, I'm not getting any kind of commission for selling the equipment.
Okay, good enough.
I tried to maintain that distance. But, there's lots of good companies out there. And,
there are.
That's why I wrote the auditory resolution for the National PTA and gained the support of 6 million members when I did that. And we ended up getting this technology in many classrooms throughout the country.
What percentage of classrooms have this now? Do you know, Suzette, or what percentage of teachers? Well, I guess the same question. What percentage of classrooms have this now, or schools, however you want to answer that?
I wish I knew. It's just difficult to track that kind of information. But it's funny, since my book has come out, a lot of readers have been getting in contact with me and saying, we just realized that it was because of you our school got this equipment. And so I think it's probably more than I even realized way back in 2005 or 6. But that kind of kick-started my passion for education. And I did that advocacy for about 4 years. And then in 2009, I made the decision to go back to school and become a math teacher. And that's what I did.
Maybe you could teach me.
I tell you, I really believe strongly that every child deserves an opportunity for a good education, and it just really ignited that passion in me. So that's what I did, and then I was hired by the Baltimore County Public School System.
Yep. Are you still teaching?
I am not. I resigned in July 2019, and then I started writing the book. And, the goal of my book is really to expose the needs in our education system and really to encourage people to join the conversation and contribute ideas and work together to make the system better. So that's really what I'm trying to do now. So I've kind of switched my advocacy into a different direction at this point.
Wow. Congratulations on all of that. When you were a professional mom and homemaker, did you have a profession? What were you doing when all this started, if I may?
I was originally
knowing
a
that being a mom and a homemaker is plenty. That's not my point. Were you professional at that point? Yeah.
Yeah, I was. I was a certified public accountant. So
hence the math. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow, that's great. What grades math did you teach? I'm fascinated by this.
I started out, I really wanted to be a middle school math teacher, and I did some work in the middle schools, and then I ended up, most of my time was spent teaching fourth grade math.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, when I was a kid, just the one teacher taught everything, you know those days, okay?
Yes,
there were only six teachers in the world. It was a long time ago, so that's why. Right. It was
a
very, very, very long time.
Do work that way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just astounding. And let me ask, Susanna, are you, and I think you are, but I just want to ask, People might be interested. Are you interested in doing speaking engagements or working with schools and all that sort of stuff these days?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I really am interested in public speaking about this, you know, just really, again, trying to educate people, inspire them to, you know, use their voice to make a difference.
Yep.
Because, you know, I found that it's possible. I mean, I proved that back in, you know, the early 2000s. So I know that
parents and teachers
really can make a difference.
They truly can. And by the way, and I want to ask you, which is a little self-serving, are you familiar with our Consortium for Equity? Are you at all familiar with that?
I am not.
Well, I'm going to give you an assignment before we go on here. I want you to go over to our website. I'm just going to send you an email afterwards, which is ace-ed.org. That's our American Consortium for Equity in Education. And I'm going to introduce you to that. Because we want you involved in what we do. Because what you do is very important to what we do. Okay?
Great.
So I'm
going to
put those
two
things together because what you do is absolutely fabulous. You know, I must ask, you were an accountant and a mom. Okay?
Yes.
You had a son with a challenge. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to enter the wacky and wild world of education bureaucracy.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And it is. No, it is a bureaucracy. All right? And everybody means
it
well.
Is.
Please don't misunderstand everybody. But it's a bureaucracy. All right? I'm curious, as you came from the world of business and then started working as a parent into the world of education, what did you see? What were the frustrations? What was your feeling about the educators your son worked with and all the folks who were geared to help him? What were your thought processes as that all started? And you worked your way through.
I think probably the most apparent problem that came to my attention, or just the difference that you're talking about between, you know, the private sector and public education, is that there are so many levels of bureaucracy that you have to go through to have a change made. And oftentimes I found that those different levels didn't necessarily have the same goals, and they didn't seem to communicate with each other. And so that was probably, you know, just one of the things that jumped out to me right away. Plus, it takes so long. You know, the process just is expanded or multiplied because you do have to go through all those layers.
It's amazing. And then you yourself became a classroom teacher, as you said, a fourth grade math teacher. Okay, which, by the way, is a very valuable profession to the field. Any math teacher, they're hard to find. All right, and I'm sure you were a good one. All right. So knowing what you knew at that point, you went through the bureaucracy. Okay. You had worked with the PTA. Okay. Now you went to Teachers University, and you probably Towson State, if I know, Baltimore County. Did you go to Towson State?
No, I did not. I went to Goucher.
Oh, I tried. Okay. Most people go to Towson if they teach in Baltimore County. Okay. And anyway, so you went through all that. And now you're a classroom teacher. You are now Franz Kafka in the bureaucratic system. Okay? What were your thoughts as you suddenly were immersed in it? And you taught for a while.
I did.
In
total, it was about 10, including my student teaching. But I was in that fourth grade position for about 7 years. I'll tell you. So here's the difference. When I was advocating for the hearing technology, I was trying to get ideas from the very bottom of the pyramid up to the top, if you think of education as a pyramid. And when I became a teacher, what I found is I was on the bottom as a teacher on that bottom layer.
Actually,
and
where I was
dealing. Yes, and then I was dealing with the impact of policies and practices that were being pushed down from the top to the bottom. So it was a very different perspective. I think what I found is that, you know, while a lot of the people and institutions making the policies and practices have very good intentions, those people aren't always the ones who are in the classroom and really recognize the challenges that a classroom teacher is up against every day. And so sometimes, you know, what the ideas that they're coming up with are maybe great ideas in theory, but they don't necessarily apply to all situations and all schools and all classrooms. So that's kind of what I experienced from another side.
Wow, it's just amazing. Who helped you? Let's go back to when you were advocating, okay, before you became
sure.
a classroom teacher. Who was it, or if there were more than one, who helped you? Okay, and I have to say something. I know you went through the PTA, the Parent-Teacher
mm-hmm.
Organization, which says a lot right there, okay? But within the educational system, who was it who stands out that really helped you get this done, if anyone?
I had one person that really was very supportive, and it was a board member who was
wow.
on the Baltimore County Public School Board. And early on, I had heard about him, and I sent him my research and information that supported the need for that technology in the schools, and he became a huge supporter and mentor. And so I think he was instrumental in helping me.
That's a great answer as far as I'm concerned, because the school boards don't get enough credit, and they are the voice of the PTA is the voice of the people. I think that's really important, but it saddens me that within the education bureaucracy, you couldn't
mm-hmm.
name someone there, be it a guidance counselor, a school nurse, a whatever, a school psychologist, whatever the case may be, okay, a teacher, okay, who really stood out and helped you, or a school administrator. That's really a very interesting take on all this, and it says a lot,
mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, okay, in my opinion. Yeah. I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's just, it is a bureaucracy. Okay, and I have to say, for years, we have all said the word equity, okay, and the problem is too few people actually do something once they say the word equity, okay, and it really
mm-hmm.
does mean that all children, okay, deserve an equitable education. They deserve access to learning, and if you hadn't really taken the bull by the horns and really done it, okay, there would be access denied to a lot of kids, and you're responsible for bringing a lot of auditory work into schools and into classrooms. And if I may do it, absolutely the worst pun, may I, you ever heard in your life? You are
sure.
the Paul Rehear of education.
Well, that's very nice.
Bad.
Very kind.
Thank you. The Paul Rehear, get it? Because you put out the call. I really love it. Okay, COVID just happened, okay?
Right.
As you look at this, you have a very particular point of view. Because you were a parent advocate, all the great work you did, then a teacher, now an author. When you look at what happened over the past year, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think COVID, it just magnified problems in education that already existed. I don't think, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, COVID created a lot of problems in education. I don't think it created the
mm-mm.
problems. I think those problems were already there, and it just,
mm-hmm.
magnified them.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. And again, my standing line, which you probably never heard, okay, is that we kicked the can down the road for a long, long time. And finally
right.
we got to the end of the road, and it was a cliff. And the cliff happened
yeah.
last March 13th, a year ago. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it did magnify. And it magnified for kids with learning difficulties. I'll include your son in that, okay, whatever that learning difficulty might be, by race, by gender, by rural, by urban, by rich,
yeah.
by poor, by race, okay? We knew all this. We intrinsically knew all this, okay? But we kept putting
right.
it off and saying, yeah, well, we're doing all we can, but the fact of the matter is we are not. And I do agree with you, every teacher, should be wired for SEND. Okay, there
mm-hmm.
is no reason why not. Okay?
Yeah.
No, we got all this American Rescue Plan money coming in. I hope they use it for that. Okay. Do you think it's just bureaucracy that holds us back?
I think that's a big part of it. I also think that we need parents and teachers to become more involved and speak out. I think, you know, I think a lot of teachers realize there are problems and they just, A, they're so overwhelmed with responsibilities.
Yeah, they are.
To just teach that, you know, they don't have a lot of extra time to become advocates. And I think they're also afraid sometimes to just speak out on issues. So, you know, I'm hoping my book encourages teachers to sort of join me and to speak up and share their ideas, because teachers have amazing ideas. And I think that if we started listening to those ideas more, we could really benefit mm-hmm. from it. And, you know, I think parents also, they just, they need to become stronger advocates as well.
What would hold a parent back? Okay, that's such an interesting thing. Some of it, I have to say, is cultural, okay, especially if I may, in the Latino culture, okay, where in the home countries, the schools are kind of off limits, and people come here and they don't know how to react to a welcoming public school, if I may, okay, but the school must reach out, okay, and a lot of schools are doing that to make sure. Okay, that parents understand we want you involved. All right, it's a key thing right now. It just
right.
it just makes all the difference in the world. I'm always amazed. You know, it's funny you say that, because parents, you know, I don't know what would hold them back. All right, and I never understood what, you know, people moan and groan about taxes, but for goodness sakes, they also want the best schools. So we have to make sure that it's an odd dichotomy there. It really and truly is. So what do you want people to walk away from your book? I mean, and I want you to talk a little bit more about the book. Does the book talk more about those children with hearing difficulties, or does the book talk more about advocacy in general?
Yeah, okay. Well, the book is divided into two sections. And the first section is really the why part. It's why I feel like we need to make improvements in the public education, you know, why the system is failing. And I focus in on five topic areas: Common Core, technology, English language learner programs, grading policies, and behaviors. And so the first part of the book focuses on those education topics that I saw as big problems when I was in the classroom. And then the second half of the book is the how to go about making changes in the public education system. And that's where I really go into the hearing advocacy piece and what I did personally to, you know, bring that issue up to the education world and really try to make a difference. And I break it into 10 steps that parents can use, or teachers, to help advocate for improvement. Yeah.
And let's not forget, many teachers are parents.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Let's not forget that's that simple point, which sometimes we do forget.
Yes.
All right?
Yes, we
do. And it's really, you know, I just can't say enough for what you did to work your way through a system, okay, and can just continually go. And with your son, okay, I must ask, how old was he when they first discovered this?
He was, I think, around 5 or 6 years old.
Okay, so he's in school, is my point. All right, and
yes,
how
he's in
long?
Kindergarten.
Okay, so now he's in kindergarten. How long did it take before they got a teacher with a microphone? What grade was he in when that happened?
Second grade.
Oh, that's not too bad. That's not too bad.
No,
I thought you were going to say sixth grade. Yeah.
Well, that's because
yes.
he had a mom that was pretty relentless.
He had a good
mom.
He had a good mom. So let me ask this. Okay, you were a fourth grade math teacher, which means like in fourth grade, the kids had a number of teachers, all right? So he would go from class to class, or different teachers would come to that class or however it worked, okay? Was every teacher wired for sound for Christopher?
By the time he was in fourth grade, yes. I had managed to get it into all the classrooms in his elementary school.
Well, and you were in Baltimore County Schools. So you were in Baltimore County Schools.
Yes.
Do you like wear a cape with an S on the back of it, like Supergirl?
Not yet.
Wow, that's just amazing. Well, let me take it a little bit further. Let's go into middle school and high school. Were all the teachers mic'd for sound for Chris?
No, he didn't have it at all in his middle school or high school, no.
Wow. So what happened then? Was he better then? Was his challenge cleared up by then?
His challenge had, you know, lessened at that point. And at that point, I had kind of given up on Baltimore County, on trying to get systems anymore in Baltimore County. And I really was focused more on other state, you know, other areas and other states.
Okay. Well, did he wind up going through Baltimore County schools?
Yes, he went through all the Baltimore County system, yeah.
Okay.
Through 12th grade.
That's really interesting, and he's I'm sure he's doing fun. Where is he now? How old is he now, 50, 40, 80? How old is he?
Yeah, I'm not that old.
I know, 22. I'm only kidding you.
He is 22 years old, and he's a senior at the College of William & Mary, and he's about to graduate.
Wow. Second oldest college in the United States, College of William & Mary.
Yes.
All right, good for him. What's he going to do?
He is an economics major, and he has a job lined up already in Baltimore.
Yeah, but I was going to say, what's he going to do, or is he just going to live in your basement for the next 4 years? But I obviously know he's going to do better than that. Okay, wow, for him. Good for you.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. What a great story. What a great story. I got to tell you, you are really something, Suzanne. And we're going to get to know you a little bit better, okay, with our consortium and you, because what you do just fits so beautifully with what we're trying to do. And you are just a magnificent advocate for kids and education and specifically hearing challenges. But just in general, you're really something. Thank you for being with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Okay.
Oh, you are welcome. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. We're saying bye. Bye, Suzanne. You are wonderful. Suzanne DeMallie, DeMallie. And you can Google her. It's SuzanneDeMallie.com. My voice is cracking. Or you could go to probably Google her book, Can You Hear Me Now? And enough said. She's just incredible. Okay? Well, thank you, Suzanne. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Please go over, see what we're doing over there. Join with us. It's important stuff, and we can make changes, if anything. Suzanne proves that. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. I got a stuffy voice all of a sudden. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.